KCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
Thanks for listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Ladies and gentlemen, a federal emergency has been declared for the nation as we deal with COVID-19. And in turn, many state governors have also enacted a state of emergency, which has triggered many emergency powers which have been put into place. Some are using restraint. Others seem to know no restraint in carrying out of these powers. For instance, yesterday, the governor of Wisconsin, Tony Evers, tried to usurp control over our state's election, and with just hours remaining before polls open, made the announcement that he was using emergency powers to cancel today's election in our state. Well, just hours later, the Wisconsin Supreme Court overturned his violation of the separation of powers and restored individuals having the right to cast their votes today, as polls are open until 8 p.m. Central Time here in Wisconsin. But how did these emergency powers come about? Are individual rights evaporated in such an emergency? And what about the CARES Act? As people across this nation await their check from the federal government, are there matters in the CARES Act that draw concern? Well, joining us today by way of phone, we welcome Twyla Bray. She is the president and co-founder of Citizens Council for Health Freedom. Twyla is a registered nurse. She is author of Big Brother in the Exam Room, The Dangerous Truth About Electronic Health Records. She's a speaker on the Health Freedom Minute, heard on stations across the nation. Twyla, thanks for joining us here today on Crosstalk.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. Thank you, Jim.
Let's first begin with this emergency powers enacted by the president and by state governors across this nation. How did these powers come about?
Well, I think there's at least two different types of powers. There's one, just the emergency management powers, which a lot of states have had for a very long time. But then back in 2001, right after 9/11, the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, they put out a proposal that they wanted every state to pass, and it was called an Emergency Health Powers Act, and it was a model version of that they wanted every state to pass. And so there was almost 40 states that introduced that legislation, and there were 20 states that passed it in part or in whole. And so for some states, it's been there, you know, since probably 2002, so about 18 years, and it's just been sort of waiting for something like this. And just as a few things that might be in, I didn't check to see, you know, like for instance, I know you're located in Wisconsin, I didn't check to see whether you have it or not.
Yes, we do.
Okay, and so the laws can be different, but in essence, a lot of the initial proposal said it would put the health officials in charge, for instance, of the National Guard, or it would allow them to quarantine and isolate you without your consent. It would allow treatment, testing, examination, vaccination, et cetera, all without your consent. But a lot of the states, they took, as I said, either in whole or in part, a lot of them took it in part, or they also changed some pieces of that. Mm-hmm. So, like, in your neighboring state of Minnesota, our organization got it changed so that people have a right to say no. They have a right to refuse testing, examination, treatment, vaccination, et cetera. But the state does still have a right to put them into quarantine and isolation.
Yeah. I believe it was called the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act.
That's correct.
Which was very interesting as this came out from a terrorist attack upon the nation. But that was the, you know, that mantra, never let a crisis go to waste. That was already in place back then to enact these kind of emergency health powers by individual states all across the nation.
Right. And I think, you know, your listeners might think, well, you know, how do we know that's really true? Well, we really know that is true because for 3 years, the CDC had been paying somebody to write this piece of this proposal. And so within about 5 or 6 weeks, it was October 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
October 23rd is when they pounced with this thing that they've been planning for 3 years. So it was definitely, you know, waiting for this crisis in order to get this, push this thing forward.
So do citizens lose their rights during a time of emergency if this is invoked?
There are some rights that they would lose, right? Like you don't you don't retain the right to, you could stay in your own house, but as we see, like in Kentucky, where people were starting to leave their homes, certain ones that were being commanded to stay into quarantine or commanded to stay in isolation, they started putting, what are those called, those electronic bracelets.
Monitoring
bracelets.
Them.
To monitor them to make sure that they were staying in their house. And so different states have become more draconian about this, and things could certainly be challenged, but in a time like this, it's very hard to even, you know, challenge it, to get an attorney, take it to a court, yeah. Right? And a lot of people aren't prepared to even do that.
Yeah, and we've seen, for instance, people who have been given full freedom to go inside abortion clinics to kill the life of their baby, but a person does not have the freedom to stand on a sidewalk, even with social distancing, 6 feet apart from others, holding a sign saying this is wrong. I mean, we have seen a police presence multiple police presence and vehicles that have gone in to confront a pro-life individual or individuals outside because you need to be following stay at home.
Well, and that's just also interesting. I think when, you know, people look at that, they just look at it in the face now of something that everybody uses, the grocery store.
Right.
So no limits on the grocery store, right? Everybody's going to the grocery store, and 6 feet, not 6 feet, you know, touching different things, looking at different things, deciding if they want to buy them or not, right? You know, if you're, why is a partial shutdown, you know, why are certain ones considered essential and certain ones not considered essential? And I think that their answer to me would be, well, it's because we're trying to flatten the curve. So we want less people to end up in the hospital at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But there's all sorts of conundrums, I think, in all of this. You could even see it when they said, well, there can't be any gatherings more than 5,000 people, and then it was more than 500 people, and then it was more than 10 people, and then it was stay at home,
mm-hmm.
Right? And so how did 5,000 and 500, how did that help anything, right? And there was no social distancing at that time. It was just like no bigger groups then. And so you see this kind of movement, and you can see some of the earlier ones that don't make any sense. They really just don't make any sense.
And yet we see the elements of what control looks like on so many different fronts. And, I mean, we have seen, I read the article yesterday of a person who was out in, I think, off the coast of California, surfing or something like that, or windsailing, and he was told to go back in, go home, you're not following the governor's orders, and yet he's out there in this body of water all by himself.
That's right. He's got much more than 6 feet around him.
Yes, except for maybe a few of the fishies or something. Twyla, we saw in light of this, and we want to get to our bigger point here today, but we saw the wrangling going on in Congress over what we now know as the CARES Act. What exactly is this act?
So the CARES Act is a bill that is almost 900 pages. It was drafted in secret. It is the third coronavirus bill. It is a $2.2 trillion bill. It has things in there specific to coronavirus, but it has also other things that were slipped in there and then, you know, just passed without any kind of public notice whatsoever. By being the third bill at $2.2 trillion, I think it's interesting for your listeners to know that the first bill was $8.3 billion. The second bill was $100 billion, but the deficit created by it is expected to be $191 billion, so almost twice as much as cost. And then this one is $2.2 trillion. And so this is the one that is going to give checks to mm-hmm. people at different levels of income, you know, the $1,200 or the $2,400 checks that are going to come
mm-hmm.
to apparently help you. But in the bill as well are things that were quite unexpected and for our organization we're very unhappy about.
Yeah, and we're going to look.
I don't know if you want to get me into those.
Yeah, momentarily, but I just want to say this, that we've got number four coming. Next, we're talking about another $2 trillion stimulus for infrastructure. There are those who are even talking about package number five and package number six. So the jury is still out on all of this. And Twyla, as you review the matters of this CARES Act, this package number number three, the $2.2 trillion package. Many, of course, are very concerned about the huge price tag with this, but you've also been looking at the contents of this, and you've raised concern over a nationwide health surveillance system. Share your concern.
Yes, so to our surprise, we discovered this in the appropriations section of the bill. I think it was 2 or 3 days later. You know, when it comes out so quickly, you have no idea, and you can't look that fast, and then they're just voting.
Legislators couldn't look that fast either. I mean, I heard a legislator say, you know, we're given this thing after midnight, and then we're supposed to vote on it right away, so we didn't even have time to know what's in this thing.
Right, and it just shows you how much congressional leadership cares, or Senate leadership cares one whit about what they're, you know, the other members. It's all just the leadership doing what the leadership wants to do. And so what this section is, it creates a public health surveillance and analytics infrastructure. Public health surveillance and analytics infrastructure. It has $500 million to build it, and it doesn't have a lot of details in the bill, but here's what we know from those who promoted it. We found out who promoted it. We found an announcement on their website telling everybody to thank members of Congress for putting this in here and that they tried to do this for years. And this is the HIMSS, which stands for Health Information Management System Society, HIMSS. It's the largest sort of trade organization, as it were, lobbying outfit for the data industry. And it includes government members, it includes corporate members, it includes healthcare members, everybody who wants all of our data. And so what they're looking forward to in building this is real-time access to monitoring the American public. And, of course, they would use a situation like this to say, well, not now, you see, now this is why we need this, and so now put it in. And, of course, you know, behind closed doors, they just did it. You know, and it's a huge thing to say that they're going to build a health surveillance system across the entire nation, but not one whit of public discussion over this.
Yes, and boy, this opens the door for many things here, but one of which comes to many people's minds. They said, I thought we had HIPAA. We've got this, we've got to zip the lips. We can't make sure any information gets out. I mean, we can't have spouses learn about what medical information is happening with our spouse. HIPAA should protect us. Comment on that issue.
Yes, well, as I say, HIPAA is not a privacy rule. It is a data disclosure rule, and a very permissive one at that. And so HIPAA HIPAA lets all of these entities, all these third parties, all these business associates, all these health plans and data groups and everything into your medical record if those who hold your data choose to share the data. So if your health plan has data, they can share it with all of their business associates. And so a really good example of this is a healthcare system, so a hospital clinic system, who has shared the medical records of 50 million people with Google. Google has become their business associate partner. Google is going to data mine all of the medical records of these people. It includes their names, addresses, diagnoses, medications, you know, everything. It's the whole kit and caboodle given over to Google, and it's perfectly legal under HIPAA.
Folks, we're going to pick up with this right after the break. I mean, this is amazing, a partnership with Google that is mining medical records. Thank you, Congress. We'll be back in a minute. You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, geologist and president of the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, was ancient man primitive?
Chris, in no sense was ancient man primitive. Man was created in the image of God with a large brain and great intellect, able at the very least to communicate with God in the Garden of Eden. Even in the early chapters of Genesis, man had agriculture, had metal workings, and he made musical instruments. Those civilizations of man that sprung up right after the flood were likewise quite intelligent. Think about it. Even the pyramids speak of an intelligent engineering ability of high quality, an ability which may have been lost up until recent times. There is no scientific evidence that man rose up from the animals. This is an evolutionary story which doesn't fit the facts. Mankind created intelligent at the start. Now that fits the facts, and that's the Back to Genesis truth.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Twyla Braze is with us today. She is president and co-founder of Citizens Council for Health Freedom. By the way, their website is cchfreedom.org, cchfreedom.org. We're talking today about COVID-19 and preserving patients' rights during the state of emergency. And friends, indeed, we saw pass the CARES Act. $2.2 trillion, nearly 900 pages in information. And one of the things that we are finding out is that there was this nationwide health surveillance system tucked into this. And Twyla, you use this acronym HIMSS, this Health Information Management System, which has just been, people have been salivating to somehow get this introduced and found occasion to have that put into this this relief package here for the nation. We'll find out how much relief will come from this. But at the same time, you've been talking about this mining of medical records. So that break kind of interrupted us. So let's sew these items of clothing back together here.
Sure. I just, in talking about HIPAA, HIPAA, according to the federal government, shares or permits sharing of medical record information, identifiable medical record information, with what's called covered entities. Those are things like your hospital, your health plan, your clinic, your laboratory, you know, all of those kind of things. And then with business associates, of which there are 1.5 million. No clinic, no hospital, no health plan has to share your data, but they are permitted to do it without your consent. And so your data is being shared broadly, without your consent. And there's been some of these things that have gotten in the way. Even though it can be shared legally, what they need to share it more easily is to make it all computerized. And that's why with the electronic health record mandates, back in 2009, and now that's why you see all these electronic health records in the doctor's office. It's not because they all wanted them. Mm-hmm. It's because they were mandated to have them or be penalized. So with that, and then all of these state health information systems that were also funded at the same time, and then the fact that HIPAA doesn't give you any control over your medical records, and now we add a public health, which means a government, a public health surveillance and analytics infrastructure to this whole thing, you know, and we're building a net. We're building a net to capture all of our data, make it all available to everyone else who wants to use it for their own purposes. And so, you know, this is a convenient thing for them. And they did it all behind closed doors, and Congress didn't care. They were all for it, apparently.
And you said they're partnering with Google on this?
And so, sorry about that. So then, so I'm giving you an example of under HIPAA what can happen.
Okay.
And in October, it was announced by a whistleblower. I think it was October, maybe it was November. A whistleblower announced that all this information had been shared with Google from the Ascension Health System. Ascension Health System. It's in 21 states. There's 50 million. People that are part of Ascension and all of their medical records are in Google. Now, what hasn't gotten as much attention is that Cerner, which is an electronic health record system, they have just done a contract with Amazon. So Amazon is going to get all the data from the Cerner medical records, wherever they're located, all around the country, 250 million people's medical records. And this is, and we were talking to Congress, we were talking actually to a Democrat member of Congress or to the staffer, and I don't remember how she just looked at me and she said that we know it's legal. And it was very clear that she wasn't very happy about it. And I thought, see, now this is exactly what we need to get the American public to realize, that HIPAA doesn't protect you a whit. It gave all of your information to everyone. And then they build up all these systems, like this new public health surveillance system, right? And HIPAA isn't going to protect anybody's data from entering there. HIPAA is going to let everybody's data go into there.
Folks, it's amazing, and you're learning some of the things that were put in here, things that are now permanent into our statutory law here across this land with the establishment of this. And what you mentioned, Twyla, I believe, is that we don't quite know how this is fully going to take shape yet or what form it's taking, how it's going to be implemented, because some of those details are yet to come to place.
Right. Yeah, we don't know because the law is as the law just establishes it and gives it $500 million. It's by looking at what the advocates want it to do that we can see where they intend it to go and where the government is likely to take it. But, you know, the name itself, Public Health Surveillance and Analytics Infrastructure. So you know it's surveillance, you know it's government because it says public health, and you know that they're going to analyze the data, and you know that it's a full infrastructure. So it's a nationwide infrastructure for government to gather data, surveillance, and analyze the data. That you know that just out of the title, and they've got $500 million to do it. And you know the thing that you mentioned about all these other bills, just as a reminder to the American public that's listening, in February, our national debt was $23.2 trillion. At that time, they expected by the end of this year to add $1.02 trillion, and that was before all of these bills.
Wow.
So all of these people are not working, and all of these businesses are shut down and not paying taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I mean, I just think, well, where's this money coming from? Are they going to print it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and what many have feared, too, is doing things like this will cause a collapse, of our economy, a collapse of the dollar as we know it. And we do see the calls as well for one world government. We see them for a common currency, et cetera, taking place. And something else we're seeing, Twyla, as well as under the surface, we are hearing of those that are calling for mandatory national vaccinations. What's your perspective on that?
Well, I'll be frank with you to say our organization doesn't do a lot with vaccinations. We let the vaccine choice organizations do most of that work. But what I can say is, you know, here in Minnesota, where we're engaged at the national level and at the Minnesota level because that's where our office is.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have made sure that that we have kept conscientious objection in our state. And we wouldn't do a whole lot of work. We'd let the vaccine groups do most of the work, but as soon as they try to take that out, we'll go back and we'll fight with them. Because parents do need to have the choice of what is going to enter their children's bodies. All of these pharmaceutical companies who are coming out with all these new vaccines, you know, there's definitely a vaccine injury compensation fund, so it's not like it's without injury. It's not like anybody knows it's without injury. And so the parents do have to have that. You can't have the government saying to people that, you know, you have to inject yourself with X, Y, and Z,
sure,
or otherwise we're going to take your child and do so.
Have there been other things in the CARES Act that your organization has called attention to the public as to what you're discovering in it?
Yes. There's one thing in particular for anybody who has a friend, a family member, or themselves is dealing with a substance use or abuse issue. The other thing that they took the opportunity to do in this coronavirus bill is to align the data sharing with HIPAA. So people who have had substance use issues have always had the best consent requirements in the entire nation. So their data doesn't go anywhere without an informed written consent. And then wherever it goes, if that person wants to share it again, they have to get another informed written consent from that patient, and so on and so on and so on. No redisclosures. It's as tight as they come. But this bill now says the only thing that it says everything is going to be just like HIPAA. So it'll be all shareable after the first consent for data sharing. So if you just consent once to share your data, that person can redisclose it as many times as they want, and those after them can redisclose it. So for people who have substance use issues, they have one piece of protection that the rest of us in the country don't have, but they don't have the protection they used to have. So they have the one piece of protection is that they can say no to any consent or any sharing whatsoever. And that's what they should do, because after they say yes to one share, then it can be redisclosed as often as anybody wants to redisclose it, as is happening in HIPAA.
Twyla Bray's with us. CCHfreedom.org is our website, CCHfreedom.org. We've seen a whole lot of overregulation taking place, and it really varies from state to state right now. But is this impacting people's ability to get care?
Yes, and so this is a great opportunity for me to just talk about a certain medication that is 70 years old. It's called hydroxychloroquine, or Plaquenil. And this particular medication has been used for malaria. It's been used for rheumatoid arthritis. It's been used for lupus. It's been used forever, right? And there are doctors saying this is a great thing for people. And there are boards of pharmacies in different states. There are governors in different states who are saying that can't be used in our state unless you're in a hospital, or they're saying it just can't be used at all because the FDA never approved it for that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a good thing for everybody to realize is that 20% of the prescriptions today, all prescriptions today, are prescribed for off-label uses. In other words, the FDA never approved it for that, but the doctors figure out it worked for that. And that's perfectly legal. The only thing that can't happen is you can't market it as though the FDA had approved it for this use, but doctors can prescribe it, and they're doing it all the time. So here we are in the middle of COVID-19, some of the governments are just cracking down on this, and they particularly, I think, don't like it because Trump has mentioned it.
Right.
But there's a great case in Florida that got in the news with a guy who was in the hospital. He started calling his friends and his families and telling them goodbye because he was just losing air and losing air and losing air, and he thought he was going to die, and he would have, except that one of his friends sent him a text about this particular medication, and he talked to the doctor about it, and the doctor said, well, if you want to use it, and he said yes, and he went to bed at 11 p.m., and he woke up at 4:45 a.m. looking at the clock, and he said, wow, I can breathe. This is great. And that story got out, and the governor of Florida contacted a company in Israel and is having that medication sent to Florida for distribution around the state of Florida.
Yeah.
So here's just one example of, you know, where the big guys shut down something. Well, that's very, very useful, and try to tell doctors what they can and cannot do.
I saw the New York Post, and they reported a survey, 6,227 physicians in 30 countries, of which 37% rated this as the most effective therapy for combating COVID-19. And as you mentioned, President Trump just referred to this as being a promising treatment, and he's doing that. And now, you know, it's got hope with it. And now we have an Ohio Democratic State Representative, Tavia Galansky, who's tweeting out that she wants to prosecute President Trump at the International Criminal Court for crimes against humanity for pushing this medication.
Well, you know what's even more, I'll say hopeful on one side and ridiculous on the other, is that there's new information coming out that what COVID does is it somehow strips off the iron off of the hemoglobin. And so patients are sitting there in the hospital. They're supposed to have oxygen saturation rates of somewhere between 95 and 100% right in their blood.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly they're just, I should wait for this.
Okay. Folks, don't go away. We'll be back in a minute. Twyla Bray is with us today, and we're going to find out more about promising treatments and how people are being helped, and certainly how there's been a squash on this in so many different fronts. Back in a minute. This is Crosstalk.
BCY introduces you to the classic film, A Thief in the Night.
Suddenly and without warning, literally thousands, perhaps millions of people just disappeared. A few eyewitness accounts of these disappearances have not been clear, but one thing is certainly sure. Millions who were living on this earth last night are not here this morning. Speculation is running high that some alien force from outside our system has declared war on our planet, and some feel it to be a spectacular judgment of God.
A Thief in the Night portrays what could happen when Christ comes back for his church.
this powerful drama available on DVD for a donation of $10, or obtain the entire 4-pack prophecy set, including A Distant Thunder, Image of the Beast, and Prodigal Planet, all for a donation of $25. Call
1-800-729-9829. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America, COVID-19 and preserving patients' rights during a state of emergency. Folks, were you aware of this surveillance program tucked into the CARES Act? You're learning about it here through Crosstalk, through Citizens Council on Health Freedom, and they've been certainly combing through this and seeing its impact. Twyla Braze is with us, their website, cchfreedom.org. Twyla, just as that break was coming upon us there, you were talking about and kind of explaining oxygen levels need to be between, 95% plus, and the break was kind of interrupting us, so carry on your thought there if you would.
Okay, so let me just start a little in the beginning. So most people have heard that what happens with COVID-19 patients is they get a fever and then they start breathing worse and worse, and then they go into the hospital and oftentimes they're breathing so bad that they're put on ventilators and then they've got this pneumonia. And then a lot of people are dying even though they're put on the ventilators. And so this has been sort of like really bad news, right? And so the interesting thing that has happened is one New York City intensivist, so he's an ICU doctor, he started putting out videos on Vimeo. Basically, he said, this disease is unlike any other disease that we've ever treated. He said, it's not acting like pneumonia. It's acting like high-altitude disease, which is that the lungs get edema. They just get all swelled up. And so it's difficult. And so he said, and so we shouldn't be like on a ventilator. We might have to put them on a ventilator, but we shouldn't be doing high pressure because I think we're destroying their lungs because it's so high pressure and their lungs seem to be injured. And so it's not working. So that was the first thing that I thought, okay, that makes sense. He said, put them on a ventilator, but really low pressure because what they need is oxygen. They don't need pressure. They need oxygen. And he put out a call to everyone basically in the world to say, don't treat them with high pressure ventilators. Okay, and then the very next day, this new information comes out which makes perfectly good sense. This whole thing about needing oxygen, it turns out that what might be happening is that COVID-19 might be stripping the iron off of the oxygen, meaning that it can't carry O2, oxygen, and it can't deliver CO2, carbon dioxide, back to the lungs. And so the doctors that were talking about this is so interesting. The doctors were saying, so there are these patients. They're in the hospital. They've got O2 oxygen saturation levels of like 80 or 70%. They're supposed to be 90 to 100, 95 to 100. So that really low oxygen in their blood. And yet they're sitting there. They're talking. They're texting. But they're desaturating. So their oxygen levels are just going down, 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 down. And then they put them on a ventilator and it's still not really working. And so, and it happens really quickly. Like Boris Johnson, I'm guessing in England, mm-hmm. the head of England, right? I'm guessing that's what happened. They said like very quickly, he's just like boom. So his oxygen probably just went down. So what they're saying now is that maybe this hydroxychloroquine seems to be able to stop this process of stripping the iron off of the blood cells and allowing the oxygen to be carried the way it should be. But it needs to start soon so that the blood cells aren't injured and damaged, so there's enough of it, to stay good. And so I actually think this is very hopeful because if what they really realize is it's not really about pneumonia, it's not really even about the lungs, it's about the fact that something's happening with the hemoglobin in your blood, and that they can use a medication to stop COVID-19 from stripping off the iron, and then you can keep with the oxygen. And so if that's true, that will just change completely the way people are treated. And I can I can assure you that everybody will be looking for hydroxychloroquine or just chloroquine because that'll be simple. It's a 70-year-old drug.
Yeah,
easy to have, easy to manufacture.
What's amazing about this is just that there's such hatred against President Trump on the part of some. As you mentioned, some governors, just by executive order, have banned this from even being used in their state. You may not use this on patients. I believe the governor of Michigan, if I'm correct, recently overturned that executive order, but others have made it stick, and it's troubling that their hatred is so strong that they're giving orders like this, and even so strong that we have Ohio Democratic State Representative that is wanting to prosecute President Trump at the International Criminal Court as a result. I mean, it's outrageous what is taking place there. Friends, I'm going to open our phone lines. You can get online with us here at 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. Questions you may have for our guest here today, Twyla Brace, 800-733-9829. I understand, Twyla, you're going to have a video series coming up on Facebook?
Well, we actually, I've done 5 videos at the CCH Freedom Facebook page, so Citizens Council for Health Freedom, or just go to CCH Freedom. And so the next one will be today, this afternoon, sometime after. I've just got to prepare before I go live. But they're all Facebook Live, and then they're posted there. And I will be talking about this news about the lungs. I'll also be mentioning what are they called? Those hyperbaric treatment chambers, which seems to be a way that you can get the oxygen to go better into the blood if there's anything else in the way.
Mm-hmm.
So, So that's today. That'll be the 6th one today, and then we'll continue on throughout this crisis.
And how do people find you on Facebook?
They just put in CCH Freedom, CCH Freedom. If you search for CCH Freedom, or you can go to our website and just click on the Facebook page, and that's cchfreedom.org.
Okay, and you still are putting out your weekly Wednesday afternoon email blast, and if people want to join up with that, they still can, correct?
They can. They can go to cchfreedom.org, and right at the top of the page is where they can just click, and then they can subscribe.
Bonnie is with us from Two Harbors, Minnesota. Bonnie, you're on the air.
Hi, I have 2 things. One is to tell you right away that there is a state representative from Michigan who broke the law, who purposely went and had the series of 3 drugs that President Trump and Dr. Zelenko had first suggested, and she came out and is praising our president for what he had said. So that's one thing. You know, even though it's Michigan and that governor was crazy with what he did. The second thing is, in Minnesota, even though, like Twyla said, parents have a right to say no to vaccinations for their children, I know of a doctor who gave a vaccination to a baby, and what happened was the mother was with the baby in the room, and the nurse took the baby out to weigh it. And while the baby was out of the room and not with the mother, the doctor gave that child a vaccination. And when the mother found out that the baby had been vaccinated, had gotten this drug she didn't want it to have, it was almost as though they were laughing about it, because they said, once the child's not in your possession, it's in ours and we can give it the drug.
Hmm.
Well,
have you ever heard of that, Twyla?
That's not true, but I do always tell, and they could sue. They could sue because they should sue. And if they're interested, I actually might have an attorney here in Minnesota that might be interested in the case. She's sent some others before, so who knows. Anyway, so I could give that name as a recommendation if they call.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that I always tell parents, you know, both with the whole newborn genetic testing piece, the newborn screening at the hospital, never let the child out of your sight, ever.
Well,
that's just true. You just can't. These days, you just can't.
Bonnie, thank you, Bonnie.
You're
Let's go to Maureen in Zanesville, Ohio. You're on the air.
Hi. I just heard what she mentioned about in Ohio. Was it a congresswoman
What is your question today?
I don't keep up on this enough with Ohio itself.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to be changing any of that? Or
well, one of your state representatives there, Tavia Galansky, tweeted out that she's going to bring charges against President Trump before the International Criminal Court. And so she's been challenged on that, and she said, yes, she's pursuing that. So that's happening with one of your legislators in the state at this time.
So even if a doctor wants to put someone on that, they can't?
No, well, that's a separate issue than this. In some states, though, the governor's orders have prohibited that from taking place. So in those states, it'd be defying their governor's emergency orders if they would do it.
Okay. Right, and people have to figure out exactly how much power a governor has.
Yeah.
There's a lot of governors, I think, who are just thinking they have power to supersede all statutes, supersede the Constitution, supersede everything, and it's up to the people and the people's representatives to say, well, actually, no, you don't.
And many times...
And so you can't do that.
Many times, too, there's a limitation. Like in our state, it's 60 days where the governor has emergency authority. And what was interesting is this, they just introduced legislation recently that would take away that 60-day window and make it unlimited. However long the governor wanted to have the duration of that. And thankfully, we did not see that go advance, but great concern over those issues. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Steve next in Salina, Kansas. You're on the air.
Yeah, the media and the globalists and the communists and socialists in our government, they hate Trump. And because they hate Trump, if there's a medication, like hydrochloroquine, along with the Z-Pak, they don't want us to have it either. And it's great that we have this forum with you two, Twyla and Jim, and the information we garner is great. But you know what? Faith without action is dead. We have got to call our representatives and let them know we won't tolerate this no more. You've got to call people. I've called already 8 times this month to our governor, my representatives. Either it's email, a phone call, a letter, a petition, and gather now under 10 people. But we've got to stand up right now and let them know you're not taking away our rights, our God-given rights and our privileges right now. And that's so important to let them know we know what's going on. It can't go on any longer, even in this crisis.
Mm. Thank you, Steve. Any comment, Twyla?
Well, what I have often said is that government should use persuasion, not coercion. And I think it's very clear that nobody exactly knows what to do with this coronavirus. Nobody's ever, except for the Spanish flu back in 1918, there's been nothing like this, where it's so scary. But as some epidemiologists have said, it's possible that we wouldn't have had these lockdowns if we didn't have the media following every little case, and reporting it and making it, as big as it is, because seasonal flu kills a lot of people, particularly the elderly. And so it's hard to step back and say, what would have happened here. Is it different? It's definitely different. No doubt that it's different. It might be a little bit more lethal, and then for younger people than seasonal flu, right? And you can see that what's happening in New York is definitely different. And so one of the epidemiologists called it the domino effect. So once you have taken a certain action, say a governor or a legislature or whatever, you can't back off of it, because then if you're wrong, then you'll be charged as negligent. And so there's this domino effect of ever, ever, ever more stringent orders.
Thank you for the call, Steve. Our telephone number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. That's 1-800-733-9829. We'll be back in 1 minute. This is Crosstalk on VCY. Twyla Brace is our guest, and the website, cchfreedom.org.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brennan House. Our website's worldviewradio.com. There's a globalist organization known as the World Economic Forum, and they've been around for 50 years pushing globalism. Well, recently they released an interactive wheel on their website called the Strategic Intelligence. It's with the World Economic Forum. And what is at the center of their interactive wheel? The coronavirus, COVID-19. And when you interact with this wheel, you see that what they want to do is use this crisis for, quote, global governance. Their words, not mine. They also talk about using the crisis to bring about a digital economy and digital society and continuous monitoring. They talk about many things, including sustainable development and the illicit economy of America. They also claim that one of the threats is anti-globalism. And to fix it, they need civic education, brainwashing of children. The coronavirus is real, but it's being exploited as a psychological operation. Don't be brainwashed.
Friends, we thank you for listening to Crosstalk, and certainly spread the word. Let others know about what you have found so that they too can be informed on critical issues. And we do stream as well through crosstalkamerica.com. We have write-ups, and we post these programs usually within a couple hours after the broadcast, whereby you can share the links with others as well so that they hear the information that you hear. We're going to Glendale, Wisconsin, and Robert, you're on the air with Twyla Braze.
Hello?
Go ahead, Robert.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. I was getting ready for work. I just want to thank Twyla for all of the information that she's provided for us. I mean, throughout the years that she's been on the ministry program.
Mm-hmm.
I bless you in Jesus' name, and I thank you, brother, for always having her. I just want to ask you a quick question. I take a Tylenol and Losartan, along with hydrochlorazide, or however you pronounce it. And I've heard with these combinations that this is a pretty good antibiotic. Have you heard that or not?
Well, I don't feel qualified to answer, except that I can say that I have heard at least two of those kind of mentioned in tandem, but that doesn't mean that I would have a good answer for you as to whether they would be a so-called antibiotic.
Yeah, I can't give you any diagnosis or recommendation on that, Robert, here. That's not what we can do here. Thanks for the call. Samuel is next in Chandler, Arizona. You're on the air, Samuel.
Yes, hello. I did a search for the Emergency Health Powers Act for Arizona and could not find one. Is there a resource that you can refer me to?
Yes, well, I think the very best thing, I said this in my first video, that people could do is that they can take the name of their state and they can take the words emergency powers and then put in quarantine. So if you say Arizona law, emergency powers, quarantine, you're going to find out what you're looking for and whether it's in Arizona. It could be in rural, too, so you could do Arizona law, rural, emergency powers, quarantine. And then you'll find out whatever you have in there, in that statute.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Let's go to Luis in Milwaukee. You're on the air, Luis.
Thank you. God bless you, and thank you for taking my telephone call. I think of in the book of Genesis, the Old Testament, when God created heaven and earth, and in the 7 days he made the insects and animals, for he made man. And obviously something with the animals, in God's sense, has to clean up the mess that man makes. And something with this coronavirus is we're not really keeping everything clean. We're letting the rats dominate this world, and obviously it's gotten out of hand. But people should keep everything clean across the world. And some of the New Age people are believing their rats by far more important than humans needing food. Thank you.
Okay.
So I think what I'll just say about coronavirus is there are, and we've got something called the Patient Toolbox, and it's at patienttoolbox.org, and we're about to put out our Patient Toolbox page or drawer. We have several drawers, and it'll be a drawer on coronavirus. But there are four common types of coronavirus, and people get them all the time, and, you know, like the common cold. And then there are these three unusual coronavirus, SARS, MERS, which stands for Middle Eastern something or other, but SARS stands for severe acute respiratory distress, and there's what we have today, which is really officially called SARS-CoV-2. And so coronavirus has been here for a long time, and there's only been three really lethal coronaviruses, MERS, SARS, and now SARS-CoV-2. which is otherwise called COVID-19, what we have right today. So, you know, there are people talk about, well, where did it come from? Well, Wuhan, some people say it Wuhan, but I've heard it said Wuhan. In Wuhan, there was a market, but they haven't proven that those bats were sold in that market. But what they do know is there is a virology institute just 3 miles away from that market. And they use bats and they do viral research or research on viruses. And so there's some thought that that's what got loose. So I don't think that we, you know, I don't, you know, just in comment to what you're saying, I think you just look at it. And if you, you know, at a godly perspective, everything's in God's control. And so coronavirus has been here for a long time. This happens to be a lethal one. The last lethal one was about, it was like 2002, 2003, mm-hmm. I think.
Okay. We need to get back to the phones. Gary in New Mexico, you're on the air.
Hello, Marla.
Hello.
Gary, go ahead, please. Hey.
Yeah, you mentioned that this doctor ordered this hydroxychloroquine from Israel. Do you know of any place in the United States where a person can get this supplement? I mean, they say there's a shortage everywhere.
Okay. 12?
Well, there's less of a shortage than there is a clampdown.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the pharmacies like CVS won't give it to you. You have to get a doctor's order. There are certain states that say you can't have it unless you're in the hospital. I think that's a federal regulation, actually, that you can have it once you're in the hospital. And so it used to be very easy to get, and it's because of all this regulatory stuff that just got piled on top because of our current emergency.
Okay, thank you. And Megan in Mexico, you're on the air.
Hello, Twyla. I also very much appreciate all of your shows. Thank you. I just wanted to say that people used to kind of joke that Trump could find a cure for cancer and he would be blamed for it, and I feel like that's so much what's happening right now with this drug. And I see that today the New York Times published something alleging that his family owns stock in some company that can somehow stand to benefit from it. So it's just further and further discrediting the hope that so many doctors have seen in this drug. It's really, I just think it's so tragic.
Thank you, Megan. Twyla, we've got just less than 30 seconds. What would you like to leave with our listeners?
Well, one thing I would just say is people do, doctors do say, of course, there are some side effects, but there are lots of people who are on it long-term without any side effects, so it's not like it doesn't have any side effects, but every medication tends to have some side effect or other, and you should know that going in.
Great.
But, you know, talk to your doctor about this.
Indeed, yeah. Consult with your physician. Twyla Bray is with us from the Citizens Council for Health Freedom, and indeed, they do stand for patient privacy and patients' rights and preserving those. You can check out information, cchfreedom.org, cchfreedom.org. Twyla, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks so much, Jim.
And friends, thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.